Bang, we're going. Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance Podcast, episode number 182. We are in a different... Don't look at the camera, I don't know what
to look at the camera.
We are in a different recording studio today. We are in France, but we're not going to talk about France. We'll save that for next week.
Mate, if this one goes good, we could do another one talking about France as well, as soon as we're in France. I was thinking about that today when running.
So the second one will be about France.
I'm not sure if that's important for the intro for the show, but you continue, sorry.
You'll now notice that I'm not with Tom Walker, I'm with Marcus Smith, because he is with me in France. But we have a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about Ultra X Tanzania, which both of us were at last week with a few clients.
Should we mention that we left Tom Walker in a heap on the finish line at Challenge Roth, or is that for another show?
We can talk about that in this show as well. I'm just telling people what we're going to talk about, and then we can talk about what's happened.
Never get a podcast host as your guest. By the way, my show is quite good, Inner Fight Podcast.
How many shows? 700?
820.
820 shows. Yeah. Okay, tell us what we've been up to.
Mate, let's just... We're in Tanzania the other week.
We're in Tanzania. Interesting news. Tom Walker, Jamie McConnell, Naj, surname, I can't remember. It's too hard to pronounce. Have just completed Challenge Roth in Nuremberg, which we were at with the lovely Jeff.
It was actually in Roth, which is close to Nuremberg.
I'm going to have to re-record this. This intro,
no, you're not.
It was a Ironman distance triathlon. What did you think of the event?
Mate, that was it. Honestly, I don't have a benchmark because I haven't actually been to a full distance. I'm just thinking, I don't think I've been to a full distance Ironman.
No.
However, a little bit of backstory. Ironman is the Ironman franchise brand of long distance triathlon. Challenge Roth, I don't know the exact history. It'd be funny to get Tom back on and give his take. But Challenge is also a triathlon event organizing brand. And Roth is actually one of the older non-Ironman branded triathlons. So just to make people aware, it is still a full distance triathlon, which is more commonly known as an Ironman triathlon. 3.9 kilometers swim, 180 kilometers cycle, and a 42.195 kilometers marathon run. So the distance that the athletes are racing across is the same. However, the brand that delivers the race is a difference.
They call themselves, Challenge Family.
Challenge Family. So that's the difference. Now, to answer your question, mate, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. And I've been to Bolton, which is obviously run by the Ironman brand. And as a comparison to that, the course, it's the first one I've spectated as well. The course was just stunning.
Yeah. Well, that's the only problem, though, because Bolton's a shithole. It's hard to make a beautiful race in a dump.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the middle of Bavaria is got some of the best views, apparently, in the whole of Germany.
Yeah.
So that helped them, right?
And we, as spectators, we kind of dropped the ball a bit. It seems that we were the only spectators that covered the course on foot. Everyone else seemed to have a bicycle.
That was... And it's one of my biggest learnings that don't ever rely on Steve Little to organize anything. Like, mate, you were there, you were stood next to me. So we get to the start, which the start and transition to a different place. And it's difficult as well as a supporter on a course where there's different start points, different transition points. But we're near transition two. Well, we get to the start and Stevie says, we need to go to transition two. So we drive another 20 minutes to transition two. And it's like 6:15 on a Sunday morning in a small village of Bavaria. And he goes, don't you think we should go and hire some bikes? Like, where the fuck are you going to get some bikes?
Nothing was open.
Nothing's open. I mean, the only place that was open was the bakery to give us some breakfast.
That was it. So we walked 10K to the swim, pretty much, give or take.
Yeah, it was about that,
we managed
wasn't
to catch the end of the swim. We caught Jamie in the swim. We saw Naj on the bike. So that was good. We timed that perfectly.
Yeah.
And then standing on that bridge, watching, you could watch the swim start, you could watch them go out and then come back under the bridge, do the final loop,
yeah,
and come into transition, which is very cool.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, okay, we're unorganized. We, as we always tell people not to do, we relied on someone else to take care of our logistics and we didn't pack our bicycles. But as far as if you had a bike, the spots on the course for for watching the race were absolutely insane. You mentioned one there, mate, where the swim was on the canal, and then you've got the Solar Hill, which was just, I don't know, mate, I think you'll describe it better than I will.
The Solar Hill, it's probably the closest you could get as an athlete to being in the Tour de France,
yeah.
I think, that you'd ever experience. It's a couple of kilometer long hill. You go from a two lane wide road under a set of seven or eight speakers that were blasting out Prodigy, I think, when we got there.
It was wild.
Hanging from a crane. And then the course cuts down into maybe a meter and a half, probably less, wide.
Yeah, it was
because
intense.
Of fans.
Yeah.
And the police are trying to separate the fans a little bit so you can get your handlebars through the gaps. And it's just everyone's cheering.
I have to hand it to the police, though. I thought they were really incredible, because anywhere else in the world, except maybe on the slopes of the Tour de France, like, having spectators that were that close, as the day went on, there was bars open or they were selling beers, so there were some beer bottles kicking around, and they were relying on the people just being good people there for the sport.
Yeah.
And they weren't roughing people up in a bad way, but they weren't like pushing people around. The road just gathered itself, and the best way is we'll put more content up, but I think some of the videos that have been on the Innerfight Endurance Instagram account they really paint the picture, and hopefully Skinny sorts out when he's finished riding to America or wherever he's going. Hopefully he sorts out some of the shots that really, and some of the footage that really give people the vibe, because we could try and describe it the whole day,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, I think you need to see the videos to really get to put worth on what we're talking about.
Mate, we spent quite a lot of time on that. Another race that was going on this weekend, which I think we should definitely mention, was Ironman Nice, which is probably one of the harder European courses because the bike leg is so brutal. Yeah, very hilly. The run course is a lot easier. The water down there, as you and I know, is a lot colder.
Very cold.
Yeah.
It's even when it's calm, it's rough.
Yeah, it is, mate. And it would have been
lumpy.
It would have been a bit choppy, whereas the canal in Roth was not. And we had Paddy and JP racing down there. And although they had long days out, I think both of them would be quite happy. I remember speaking to Paddy the last week before he went over, and he said he was excited, less nervous, but expecting it to be a long day because he just hadn't done enough training. Which I think that's fair enough, you know?
And you got it finished?
He got it finished just over 14 hours, and JP was 14 and a bit.
That's interesting. What do you think? Now, I know you're not a triathlete, but what do you think of them using Ironman Nice course? So people can do it now, but then they have to go back for the World Championships on the same course.
I mean, I don't know what the bottom line on all this is, because just to give it a little bit of context, the Ironman Championships and where Ironman was born in Kona, Hawaii. I don't think it was actually born in Kona, but it's sort of, that's where it set out. It's been the place of the Ironman Championships since Ironman as a discipline of triathlon was born. Last year they announced that actually they were not going to use Kona anymore. They were going to use Nice. It's a very hard course. It's a great course. It's a great part of the world. And they were going to flip-flop from, which this is crazy as well, especially if you're a husband and wife triathletes, and if you are, sorry about that, but that one year the women are in Kona and the next year they're in Nice, and the year that the women are in Kona the men are in Nice.
Lifting the field.
Yeah, I don't think the atmosphere will be the same. At the end of the day, you're racing at the World Champs. What I have heard through the grapevine is that they've really struggled to fill Nice because people just do not want to go to Nice. But then, you know, this is the thing as well, mate. Last year, I heard a lot of negative press about Kona, that people are having to pay $10,000 to $15,000 to get to Kona. So, you know, are you ever going to be happy? And what's really going to make you happy? So if I was racing and my dream was to race at the World Championships as an age grouper in Ironman distance triathlon, I think I'd want to do it in Kona because that's the birthplace of the sport. But you can't fight the system. The system's the system.
Be interesting to see how it pans out this year.
It will be, mate. And unfortunately, and this is the biggest problem with a lot of endurance events. People are very quick to compare them against other endurance events in a negative way.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to sell Roth, but I don't know. Was the was the spectator experience amazing? We walked 30K. I had an amazing day. Mm. You know, if I compare it to an Ironman where start, transition, one and two and the finish were all in the same place, like would I have had a, maybe, but everywhere the race is different, you know? Yeah, they could have been better F&B, but that's, I see it as their loss. They put on a great race. The athletes looked happy. The course was good for the athletes.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. So what I'm saying, mate, is the endurance community is quite good all the time at sort of picking out what's not good about stuff. I think we should probably get a bit better about, like, Nice is, it's awesome.
It's a stunning, stunning
city. Insanely nice, mate. And why not test you? You're the world championships. You're an age grouper. You're one of the best age groupers in the world. Like, what should we put you on, a Zwift bike? No, go out and ride a bike on a road that has elevation, that if it rains, it will be horrendous, you know? And then the run around Nice is quite nice because it's relatively flat. So, you know, and you've chosen to race there. So, yeah, I think we can do a little bit better as a as an endurance community globally. And, you know, and it's hard. Maybe we're going a lot on Ironman. You know, a lot of people don't like the way they behave, but they're a business as well. I don't know. Let's see. Let's see what happens in end of September.
Interesting take. The guy that we sat beside, or I sat beside on the plane on the way from Dubai to Geneva, he was looking to qualify for the Ironman age group, and he did. And he was delighted that his goal was to get into the age group. He didn't care where it was.
Yeah.
He said, I want to go and have a good race. Yeah.
And that's for some people as well, mate, you know. And then you come into the whole thing, well... What was your roll down? Did you get selected on roll down, or did you actually hit a time? And, you know, if you ask me that, I actually think that there should be time frames that you have to hit. If you say you've been to the World Championships should be the fastest people in the world, and it shouldn't just be slots, you know?
Because you can afford it.
And people that can afford it. You'll have people racing at World Championships in Nice this year, men, and they'll go 15, 16 hours because they've gone there on a roll down because of what I was saying earlier. No one wants to go because everyone wants to race in Kona. Mm. And I think that's not
what that race was intended for.
Correct. Yeah. It's great for the sport, but it's not a spectacle of the high end world, like think World Championships.
It's
is
the
best of the best.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that a guy who's got 16 hour Ironman and is 47, is going to race at the World Championships. That's amazing. But World Championships, Olympics, World Cup football, we want the best of the best.
I agree with you on that one. Right, let's talk Tanzania. Yeah. So we are just back last week.
5 minutes ago.
Not a long time ago. From Ultra X Tanzania. It is a 5-day race at the foothills of Tanzania. 5 days, 250K, 5,900 meters of elevation. They say it's 4 out of 6 difficulty, but 2 out of 5 technicality. We can come to that. Temperatures ranging from 18 to 27. We can come to that. I was racing,
yep,
or running, and you were in charge of social media, which I've had so much good feedback from that, by the way.
Oh,
just that.
That I was in charge, or that we actually put some good content
the content that was like, give a really good perspective on the race. Across the field, not just the top end, but it gave people an idea of what they'd run on, how it was to run. Your sound bites were really, really good in between, and it made them think, I want to go and do that.
If anyone is, and this is not for promotion of the race, it's purely for my own self-promotion, but if you want to see my work, no, it's a split for both. You can still see all the content that we created for Ultra X Tanzania on the Ultra X account in Instagram, which I can't remember off my head. It's like Ultra X something.
Ultra X Co.
Ultra X Co. That's it. Thank you, mate. If you go to their highlights, if you go to their profile and you go to their highlights, you get each day, each stage, you get all of the stories we put up. And as Rob said, I was following the race as a little bit of commentary and sort of trying to tell the story of the race, which I've done for these guys before. It's a whole load of fun. And it's quite different to what every other race is putting out there. I mean, to trust me to have A, to have your Instagram account is stupidity, and then to constant like telling me to put up about 100 stories a day is just insanity. But they, Sam and Jamie, have trusted me quite a few times with it, and so far they still have a business. So if you want to see what the race really looks like, aside from, please don't stop listening to the show now because it's super important for Rob's listener figures that you keep listening. But if you want to really see it and what Rob was saying there, then it is all over on their Instagram.
Go and check it out. So the race format, we started off, this race has a bit of everything.
Yeah.
It really has got a bit of everything. There's flat running, there's elevation, there is long, hard, monotonous, straight stretches, there's knee-high grass, there's mountain, there's jungle. And there's, it's very, very interesting because you take 100 people, you put them in a moving campsite for 5 days and you see a whole vast array of different athletes. Some of them are very, very well trained. Some of them have signed up 2 weeks ago when there was a slot.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What do you think about that for somebody that is going to take on a 250K ultra? How much should they realistically train for something like this?
That's a super commonly asked question, mate. And I always say, it depends what sort of experience you want to have. I believe there are certain rules with a multi-stage ultra. I believe there are certain rules with all of the distances that we speak about. You should really understand what your expectations are, but I think you earn the right to unlock the next level. Let's look at it as a computer game.
Yeah.
You play really well, Mario Kart, whatever it is, and you get all of the mushrooms, you then unlock the next level. Like, that's how it should be in endurance sports.
Yeah.
However, I fully respect that everyone's reason for doing these races is completely different.
Mm.
And that really feeds back into your question. I would say, and people that come to us for coaching or that chat about it, if you have run before, distance doesn't matter too much. But if you are in a good state of health, which for me, a good state of health is not what most of the population are in at the moment. We're actually, if you're in a good state of health, you're in a lot narrower end of the spectrum. But you should be active 3 to 5 times a week. You should have good sleep health. You should have a reasonable body composition.
Yeah.
And then we have to understand what really your motivation is for the race. If you're in that category, if you want to have, I want everyone to enjoy the races. That's my motivation for coaching. I know that's a lot of your motivation for coaching and for running, mate. We want to have great experiences. We're not the best people. We're not the best runners in the world, but we want to have a good time. So I want to get you through that. I need about 4 to 6 months to not get you race fit, but to prepare you mentally as well.
Mm.
Because, and maybe we'll come to it, but you know, day 4, 67 kilometers.
That's right, yeah.
After day 3 was 50 kilometers with 1,700 meters elevation. It's not much. Yes, it's about physical conditioning, but it's also about mental conditioning as well.
Mm.
And everything that goes with it. So the strict answer is, if you're in good health, by my definition, and not a stupid definition that's irrelevant, but if you're in good health, give us 4 to 6 months and we'll get you through it. However, if you're ready to go out for, and this is another thing, some people are ready to go out for 10, 12 hours a day and just walk at 5Ks an hour. I have an insane amount of respect for those guys. And they might say they're enjoying it, but I've done a lot of these races and there is no real obvious signs that they're enjoying it.
Yes. I see a lot. The happy faces tend to be the mid-pack.
Yeah.
They almost like, it's like they really, really appreciate that they've run as far as they've run because they probably haven't run those distances either for that long or consecutively back to back.
But I agree. Like, your top 20% of runners are what I would call racing.
Yeah.
They're really smashing it. Some days they'll be absolutely on their knees at the finish line. Other days they'll go a little bit better. Then you've got that sort of mid-pack, which is probably about 40%.
Yeah.
And then you've got 40% that are, you know, they're taking a minimum of double the time that the top 10 to 20% are taking. Therefore, their recovery is reduced massively. They're out in the sun a lot longer. Like, I don't see them having a great time, I have to say, you know? And my job in Tanzania was trying to connect with these people. And often I'd put the camera in their face, sometimes directly, which I know is not, but, you know, I'd try and get some content from them, and they've got nothing.
Yeah.
Because they've put everything into the race, and they're just destroyed, you know? But nobody knows. We've all got shit going on, and the fact that they were there and doing it, fair play to them.
Sometimes I wonder, do people do races like this just to get 10, 12 hours on their own of silence and let their mind wander?
And that's what I'm saying, mate. Ultra life, triathlon, business, relationships is the same. It's about expectations. And it's interesting, you know, some people, you sit on the bus on the way to Camp One and, you know, you're like, what's the plan for this week? And I just want to get through it. Mm. I'm just here to get through it. I don't have any, you know, and you're like, wow, that's just like, that's really awesome. It really is.
It's one of those, it's what I loved about this race was there's so many different elements that allow different skill sets.
Yeah.
To either shine through or to take a huge battle. So day one is 35K. It was a late start. It was hot. I don't think the humidity kicked in then. And I just remember it being warm, very, very warm.
I think it was humid, mate. Because I ran the first 11K and then I ran the course in reverse. And No, the main humidity was day two, though,
day
wasn't
two.
It? Yeah.
Starting day two.
But it was almost a little bit, in the morning section up till about midday, maybe it was humid because it was a bit muggy, you know? It was hot, mate, from day one, right?
It was hot.
Yeah.
And I know myself, and I was running with Abdul for a bit, we decided that we'd actually completely messed up our nutrition and hydration strategy.
Yeah.
So we had to double the electrolytes that we were taking from the following four stages.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite nice for a race like this to put a short stage like that at the beginning you to almost acclimatize and adjust.
I think it's genius, mate. And you really see this. You and I have done a few of these races together. You really see it. And it's so difficult because it's human nature. But everyone just goes out so hot on
myself
day one.
Myself included.
You know?
We were running in a pack of four or five that were sitting. I think one and two, maybe even three had gone off, and there was four or five of us that were sitting in the next group, and we were going at 4:15.
Yeah, it was about 4:15, 4:20.
For the first 5K?
But something interesting, and I'd have to look again at the results, there was not many people that didn't, like the top 10 of the race were in the top 10 at the end of the week, were in the top 10 to 15 on day one. So what I'm saying here is there wasn't someone that did day one and came in like 25th and then slowly nudged themselves up. So maybe you have to, maybe that's just the way that these races are, that you have to, like, some of them epically dropped off. So the top 15, you know, was very different on day one and day five. However, 10 of those 15 were still up there, and five of them maybe fell off a cliff. Sorry, Ultra X, if I've screwed that up, but we'd have to analyze that a bit. But I think it's a bit human nature. First day of the race, you've got loads of food in your belly. You've only had one night under canvas. Everyone's excited. You've tapered for 2 weeks. You know, you're like the bull, you know, coming into a bull ring. You just go absolutely bananas. You know, and then the race starts to wear you down. Thankfully, the disgusting stuff in bullfighting doesn't happen. But, you know, it just, you start to get worn down as the days go on.
How do you see that from a mindset perspective? Because I went through waves. So stage one, first 20K was good. The last 10K was absolutely horrific. And I was questioning my life decisions. Why am I here? Why can I not run? Yeah. Why am I walking? I'm cramping. This is horrible. Come back. But then I find it quite easy to reset and go into the second day.
Yeah.
Lots of people carry that over through the night into the second stage, third stage.
I think it's back to what we said before, mate. And you know this with the athletes that you coach. If you're able to coach someone for 4 to 6 months, you're able to program them to leave today at the end of today and have a good session tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what you're obviously super good at. You're like, yeah, today was crap.
Or even you can break that down even further and go, leave that last 10K.
Leave that last 10K.
Reset at the next checkpoint.
But a lot of people haven't had that coaching. And that's where us as endurance coaches, you know, and I say this a lot. If you want to program for an ultra, ask ChatGPT. They'll throw something very, very similar to what we throw out because they've taken all their information from all of our work, cumulatively as endurance coaches over a number of years. So you're going to get the same program. But what we're working on a lot with people is, okay, like so long as we identify how that session felt, why it was good or why it was bad in this case, and then we'll make a plan for tomorrow. And that plan for tomorrow could be a day off. It can't be in an ultra race, but it could be a day off, or it could be, okay, I'll adjust slightly what we do tomorrow. Or, you know, I just didn't sleep good last night, but I'm going to sleep good tonight so I can still run those hard intervals tomorrow. And you really only get that experience with a coach.
Mm.
When you're self-coached, unless you're an incredibly mature athlete, you won't get that sort of experience. So I think that's why. There's also a little bit of sort of subconscious programming in a lot of people have not been trained in life to let things go. So they hold on to things. And if it's the first time they've been in a race and they've hit the wall on day one, they're a failure, you know? And that's our part of programming from a number of years. If I don't nail this skill in the first 5 minutes, I'm a failure. You know, and they've been told that maybe by teachers or parents, and they might not consciously know that.
They just hold on to they it, just like, hold, like trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't purposely take day one into day two, but their mind takes it because their mind doesn't understand how to leave it, you know? And that's something as well that we're working on with people. And, you know, and this is the longer I spend in this sport, the more I didn't not believe what they said about the mindset before, but the more I'm actually seeing it all play out. And, you know, people just don't know. Like, you sit with someone and you have, and this was the thing in Tanzania, you've got uber smart people,
very
massive jobs, you know, and they're there for, a lot of them are there for a release, but they're carrying it. They're carrying it to the next day. And if we sat and had a frank conversation, you say, mate, and they'll be like, yeah, I want to park it. But then they go back to their tent and their subconscious kicks in and it just takes over for the night. And so they wake up and it's just telling them because that's all they've ever done. So the trauma that they've had in their life, call it trauma, and that sounds a little bit dramatic, but it's true, is just there with them.
I think this is where when you sit around the campfire or you're sitting around the dinner table,
yeah,
at the end of the days,
yeah,
you can see who's been able to either have had a good race and they're feeling really positive and they're going to carry that through to the next day, or they've had a bad race, they're clinging on to it, or they've had a bad race, they've dealt with it, they openly share about it, and then they're ready to move on.
Yeah.
Very, very clear who those people
are. It's very clear. And it also changes. Like, I've seen the cool thing with the guys at Ultra X, I've been at half a dozen of their races since they started in 2019, and I will promote them. They've created a community that makes people want to come back,
yeah,
and be part of that community, and it's really cool. To that end, I've seen racers or athletes in their community from race to race mature. So I'd see them in their first race, whether I was doing the media for them or racing. I'd see them in their first race. They'd be exactly what you said. They just can't let stuff go.
Mm-hmm.
They take it the next day and they end up having a miserable week. Now they're at a point where they can just, yeah, I've had a shit day. I'm excited about tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and for a lot of people, maybe not the listeners of this show, but for a lot of people, it's like, how when you've had a shit day running 50K, will you ever think that tomorrow's a good day? Like, it doesn't. And this is the thing. We're almost going against, like, normal programming. Never mind if you've had trauma or if you had this. Like, you know, if you have a shit time for 7 hours physically, how can tomorrow be good? But you're a living example of it, mate. I've seen you, you know, I've seen you in a race. I'd never forget the first 10K of UTMB Spain. You were absolutely destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought you were going to pass out, you know, and everything was wet. And we just slowed down. Second checkpoint, you're better. Third checkpoint, like, you were fine.
It's like nothing had happened in the first 10K.
Yeah. And then by 50K, by Bossot, which was the morning, we had some breakfast and bang, the whole, like, so.
Change, yeah.
It's weird. And I guess the biggest learning there is if you're going to race anything, I'll make it even broader. If you're going to do life, shit's going to go wrong. And hopefully everyone continues to do life for a while. Shit's going to go wrong. We have to create some awareness around it. If you can't see it, that's okay. But what are we doing to try and let you see it? And just to try and let you sleep well tonight so that tomorrow, you know, you can get stuck into day two, which maybe was a bit more lumpy. And yeah, it's super interesting though, mate.
I have a question for you. What do you think? So in my eyes, a race like this is very, very accessible to more everyday runners,
yes,
let's say, with less training, perhaps, or less high volume than somebody that wants to do a single stage 100K, 100 miler.
Yeah.
Do you think people would get the same or can chase the same outcomes from a race like this that's stretched over 5 days? Do they suffer the same? Do they grow the same versus somebody that does it in one go?
I don't think that you could... I think it'd be wrong to try and put that in a box. I think, you know, and you've done a lot of both, mate. Multi-stage is like, it's 5 days pretty much of roller coasters. I mean, you were running for 30 hours there, give or take, over the 5 days, but you were living in this bubble, which also challenges you non-stop.
Yeah.
It challenges you from the food that you're eating to how you digest that food to how you get rid of that food. And that could be in a number of different ways. If your guts are good, you still, and it was a bit different this race, for a few nights we had proper toilets, but you have to shit in a bush. You know, you were in a tent. I mean, I was in a tent with someone I didn't know. Our faces at night are less than a meter apart. So multi-stage racing, it challenges you for such a long time, and it still asks you to keep running. Single-stage racing, the intensity can be higher, but the time frame that you're actually running, so if you compare it, let's go back to UTMB. I mean, let's compare your UTMB here in Chamonix last year. Your total run time was the same.
Exactly the same, yeah, pretty much.
As your total run time for Tanzania.
Yeah.
You know, and you could maybe say that your highs were higher, your lows were lower, but you've done 90K less, but in exactly the same time. You know, so it's like, for me, it has to be more mathematical. There has to be a bit of, you know, variables remaining the same or things to actually measure against. And I think there's, well, I obviously believe there's massive benefit in all of them. I think it goes back to what I said. I think people need, and this is the thing, if you don't want to coach full time because you don't think you need one or you don't like working with one or simply you can't afford one, some consultancy with a coach, I think, is money like really well spent. Yeah. And I'll give you an example. I did some consultancy for an athlete about a year and a half ago, going into a big race, and we'd just talk about stuff, you know, and then I'd look at different stuff, and this athlete would send some different reports in, I'd analyze them, ask some questions, and then we had like two or three, and it was an international athlete, so two or three Zoom calls, just to try and, you know, and that's cheaper than paying me to coach you for the whole month. So I think a little bit of that when you're looking at these races is probably, you know, otherwise you're just in the dark.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. I had a race debrief with a guy that had come back from MDS, and he said at the time, during the training process, he wished he'd asked more questions about why we were doing what we were doing. So at the time, I'd do the training session, go, why has Rob made me do that? It doesn't make sense. It's really bizarre. No one else is doing this. They said then during the race, he was able to go, shit, actually, Rob made me do that in training.
Yeah.
I've done that. This bit's easy. I'll just refer back to how that felt at the time.
Yeah, it was one of the things when I asked him, I know exactly what you're talking about. And when I asked him how his race was, He said the same thing. He said, I thought you guys were just absolutely off your head, some of the stuff that you were having me do.
Yeah.
He said, but when I got there, everything just clicked into place. And, we're talking a lot about coaching and stuff, and maybe to some people it sounds like we're blowing our trumpet, but, you know, you've done UTMB. It's the hardest trail race or one of the top trail races in the world, you know, and we've had athletes, and I've been to Marathon des Sables, and we've done many multi-stage races and stuff, and, like, because we both talk about it a lot and reflect a lot, we've got a lot of different... So there has to be something there, you know, and... If you're winning races and you're self-coached, don't change a thing.
Exactly. Now, this race, you go to stage two was basically an uphill run.
Yeah.
For the entirety. It had everything. It had hard, compact, sandy, like savanna plain sections. And then you went into almost like a jungle forest through coffee plantations for basically a 20K hill rep. Humidity kicked in. And then a great downhill run to the finish.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was cool. And then you went into day three, which was the Kilimanjaro stage. And again, that run had everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. The bit that really interested me, or the stage that I think gave me the most growth, was stage four.
Really?
Really. No, they have you... On stage three, there's lots to look at. You're at the base of Kilimanjaro. You're running through grassy fields. You've got the mountain on your left. Great views. Then you turn into the national park and you run up to the crater. You hammer it down for 25K as fast as you can. Yeah. That's great. But then the following day, they make you climb 500 meters, descend 1,000, and then you've got basically a marathon on the flat.
Yeah.
I thought that was really smart.
I agree with you, mate. And this is also where you're going to get people that pick races apart. You know, there are people that didn't, and I will say this, the people that didn't enjoy that 42K need to call me, number one, need to spend a little bit more time figuring out why they're doing what they're doing and why it was that they didn't really enjoy it. You know, and I hear this a lot in multi-stage racing. Oh, if that stage was like this and that stage was like that. Well, it's not. It is what it is. And I think race directors, like, they spend too much time at the casino. Huh? You know, it's a 50-50 chance, you know, and whatever. But I think some of them are like, I'm just going to put this in here because this is really... is what you said, mate. This is really what the race needs. It needs, you know, we're going to take you up on this amazing journey on, like, day two was quite challenging. So day one is hard because it's too fast. Day two was a challenge. Day three had just under 2,000 meters of climbing, or around 2,000 meters of climbing over 50K.
Yeah.
Day four, you go down and then you just hit a trail. I mean, and you hit stuff that you just know is in there's no better phrase than to call it a mind fuck. You hit a railway track and you can see it straight, like
it was 6K.
As long as your eye can see, and the end doesn't really get close very fast.
No.
So I think it's absolute genius, mate.
That was when I looked at the course profile, that was the day that I looked at and thought, that day is gonna be tough, but I'm so excited about that long, fast, I say fast, respectively fast, that long, flat marathon section. Yeah. Because that's where I think my mind is going to play havoc with me.
You said this is the stage that you took the most from. What did you take from it?
So I realized that I can just disconnect and just run.
Mm.
Like, there were stages where I was going, I hate this. This is where I'm going to walk. I'm like, actually, no, I don't hate this.
Yeah.
I just, my body doesn't want to run long and straight. So I'm just going to not stop.
Yeah.
And I held 545, 530 per K
for
that 42, 43 kilometers. And my average for the day was 6 minutes per K. And I was...
That's phenomenal.
Ecstatic with that. I thought I'd be walking sections of that. And I didn't really walk any.
But if you look at it, mate, like, I mean, and this is, I don't know if it's worth getting a Strava account and downloading all of my data to find out, because that's what Strava does quite well. It tells you how many times you've done a certain route.
Okay.
Look at how many times you've run around Al Qudra.
I suppose, yes.
You know, whether it's the 50K loop or whether it's 15Ks out, 15Ks back,
the beach track.
Yeah, or the beach track. Mm. Like, we started the coffee run in January 2020. Now, we had a few problems there, apparently. But you've run the beach track, gosh, I would say at least 200 times.
Probably.
Is it boring? I don't think I've ever run on it and gone, this is boring.
Mm.
You know, so you've trained this ability to just go, this is it. And I'm here. Yeah. And this is what it's going to be.
Appreciate that you are there, able to run. Yeah. There's stuff to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally, mate. And I think that's the biggest, again, if you're just running to get to the end, you're missing everything.
Mm.
You know, and these are some of the comments that I heard in the camp. Oh, it just went on and on. And I'm like,
exactly.
But that's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, and mate, don't get me wrong. Some days I've been on stages like that, and I'm sure at some of that stage, you're like, fuck, I just wish this was over. You know, but then you actually realize where you are, that you have run the beach track 200 times,
mm,
and you can flip the gears back into that control. So yeah, it was wild. It was a good stage.
And then stage five, they finish you off with a nice 48 kilometer. You basically run, again, you run flat, you run to the base of a mountain, super technical uphill, super technical downhill, and then you run flat back along the same course, like a lollipop loop, basically.
And this was an interesting day, and again, I think it was put together really well. The mood, and I don't know if you felt it, but the mood in the camp on the fifth morning,
mm-hmm,
normally in a camp, it's like, this is almost a victory lap. I've done, like in this race, day three was hard. Day four was long. I've nailed this race. It's in the bag. This is the first multi-stage I've been at where people were shitting themselves for the last day.
Completely right. I mean, I've done Jordan 250K. The camp on day four is electric.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
everyone goes, oh, it's much the same of what we've done.
Yep.
They tell you maybe it's slightly shorter than advertised. So great. Fantastic. And everyone goes out and smashes themselves, yeah, on that last day.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to roll the dice and go bust. I'm going to finish. The start line on stage five in this race, it was dull.
It was so dull, mate. And I was like,
why do you think?
Am I off today? Because I'm not getting any energy here. I'm not feeling anything. And it was hard, mate. It was very hard.
Do you
think
it's a culmination of the volume, a culmination of the distances, knowing that it's still a 50K, which is a hell of a long way to run?
I think that's definitely, yeah. I think normally from what I've seen, especially with Ultra X, the last day is literally just a marathon.
Yeah.
You know, and people can get their head around that. And I know from 42 to 50, a lot of it's 8K, it's an hour and a bit, it's not much difference. The other thing is that, which again, I mean, we've spoken about it already. The route to get to the mountain, because it was a lollipop. So you go from the camp, which you know you're coming back to.
Yeah.
So you go out and then you go over this mountain and then you come back over it and you come back. It's almost like an out and back. Some of the comments I heard was, it's unimaginative. You know, it's like, but that's what makes it great as well. And I think, the other thing with multi-stage racing, by the end of the week, you've developed some friendships, maybe a group of friends,
yeah,
that you didn't have before. And people are more ready to lay out their feelings.
Okay, yeah.
On day one and day two and day three, everyone's kind of, you know, they're
sussing each other out.
They're not super comfortable. But by day four, and it only takes a few people to wrap up the route, almost like I did there, as unimaginative, and start spreading that through the camp.
Yeah.
And the disease grows, you know, and then everyone's shitting themselves.
Yeah.
Plus, because the day before was long, and one thing that we didn't mention, although it's flat, that's actually harder for a lot of people because there's no respite in the course. So they've calculated how long they're out for yesterday. They've put it into the flat bits of today. They've then taken day three's climb. they've done some stupid mathematical equation that just doesn't add up, but kind of does in their mind. And then they've just realized that they're going to be out for 8 or 9 hours on the last day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, yeah, I think that's why the mood was awful, mate. Awful.
We didn't really sell the last day to people.
This is not about constantly selling it, mate. This is about the reality. You know, you were in a good mood on the last day. A lot of guys ran really, really well on the last day.
Yeah.
So again, the guys that were there for and able to stay present and understand what they were doing, you know, they enjoyed it a lot. And of course, mate, everyone enjoys the finish line. And we saw it right until the last runner came in. And, you know, you've battled for 5 days. You've had to walk a whole ton of it from one reason or another. And the speed at which Bridget ran in was just, and the energy that everyone was giving her, like, it's just nuts what the human body and mind can do.
And just sort of cements the reason why people probably run these races.
Yep.
Those final.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what keeps you going back, mate. You know, it's good. Hopefully we've given a really, well, as fair a overview of the race as possible.
Both sides of the coin.
I think that's both sides, mate. And hopefully Ultra X invite me back again. And if they don't, well,
I'm sure I
was only honest.
Guys, that's it. We need to go because actually we've got to go swimming in a river. So we will shoot off right now. We'll just wrap this up really, really quickly. If you want to go check out ultra-x.co, you will find a list of all of Ultra X's races on there. They have 250K five-day races. They've got 110K races across Azores, England, Madeira, Morocco, Scotland. They have a race in Jordan. They've got 24-hour races. They've got the World Championships in Slovenia and also Wales if you want to go there.
And if you tell them you know Rob Jones, you'll get absolutely no favors. Me neither. So don't ask us for a discount code.
We don't have a discount code.
Brilliant.
Awesome, guys. Thank you very much for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you next week.